Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, welcome back to the Double Cleanse Podcast, a podcast all about beauty, things, stuff,
fashion,
It's not, it's about influencers and makeup and skincare and just things in general. I think, you know, just things like you'll see today. It's just about doing things.
Just beauty things.
Listen, James, this is our season finale. Mm-hmm. And what a season it's been. It's been a very long season. The issue with us too is we don't understand how long our seasons are, so we just keep going. And then
so
we're like,
finish next week.
Let's do this until next week.
Yeah, we'll do this until next week.
So we're going to take a little bit of a break after this. I mean, feel free to listen back over all of them.
I mean, there's too many episodes.
Right. And keep an eye on our social media to see when we're coming back for season what?
Three.
Yeah, we just want to take a bit of a break, restructure everything.
Yeah, get a bit more interesting for you out there.
Is there anything you've been loving this week?
You know what, actually? You know when Instagram just gets their adverts actually right?
Yeah, they've been doing it a lot.
Yeah, they've been doing it a lot.
They've really known.
Actually, no, this wasn't an advert. This was a For You page, Explore page, whatever they call it kind of thing now. This is a brand called Estrid, and they actually do products that are kind of for shaving. They're a vegan brand, and I took a particular interest in their body care, because I'm a bit more into body care. I feel like I'm really lazy when it comes to my body.
Me too, and I recently, I was like, shit, I really don't want old armpits.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like the join of like the entrance to your, like, say you so, like sit there and just touch the entrance to your armpit, like that bit I think ages really quickly.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that's like muscle and stuff.
Right.
Like you could do your Michelle Obama weights.
Yeah.
Michelle Obama arms.
Yeah.
So one particular product I've been loving from Estrid is their all glowed up vegan sugar scrub. Think of a sugar scrub. Mm. Now bring that sugar down a few levels. Mm-hmm. Add a rose scent into it that isn't offensive.
Okay.
And it's like a very fine, crystallized kind of sugar scrub that leaves the skin feeling really, really soft. What I like about... Listen to this.
Yeah, I'm listening.
Scrubs that I've used in the past in the shower, and I actually keep in the shower. When you open them, there's always water in there. It's really annoying.
There's always water, and they make the shower really slippery.
Yeah. And or like they fall off your hand, and there's always bits of scrub.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's just the packaging on this, but I don't have that issue with this. It's easy to take out. Mm. Doing so, like, you can just take it out. It comes apart easy because I find a lot of sugar scrubs have some kind of thickness to them.
Yeah.
And so easy just to rub over the body, granulate away, and then rinse away.
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to using the watermelon jelly shower and shave gel. It's a 2-in-1. But it's not going to be like a menthol shower. Their products just look really good, and their packaging is all pink, and that sells me, to be honest.
Packaging is a big seller, Jack.
It's a big seller, Robert. Robert, listen, is there anything you've been loving?
Oh, I'm so happy. Oh,
this looks like a powder. What is this?
No, so this is Rose Ink Skin Enhanced Luminous Tinted Serum.
What the
now,
hell?
Rose Ink is the brand from model Rose
Rosington Hunt
Rose Huntington Whiteley. It's her brand.
Is that her name?
I believe so. And I think it's exclusive to Space NK here in the UK because it was gifted to me from
Rosie Huntington Whiteley.
That's the one. Thank you. And I actually picked up some. We went shopping together. Do you remember when we were in London? How beautiful was that?
Oh,
when we were in London and one of the staff members there was like, have you seen this? And I was like, no, what the hell? So I grabbed a few bits from it and I was like, this can't be that great. Like it's some kind of like another celebrity brand. Tried the concealer, stunning. Tried the cream blush, absolutely beautiful. Tried this, this is the most perfect.
I don't understand.
I don't understand it either. It's the most lightweight, almost invisible coverage. And it's almost like a serum with like balls of colour almost. Mm. So very similar to those tinted like BB creams that have those balls of colour that kind of explode as you apply them. But this just has the most incredible finish on the skin. Looks like skin.
It's luminous and looks luminous. Like skin without being dewy and greasy.
And it doesn't feel, there's no feeling on the skin afterwards. It's just so, so nice. And I did kind of feel that you can build it up very slightly if you do want slightly more coverage. But for me, with it, like a bit of sunburn on my cheeks, just enough coverage. It was beautiful.
I love this. How does it come in different shades?
It does, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
rose
my
ink. It's
God.
Really, really nice. Really
it's very
nice.
Confusing to look at. It looks like a tube of
sand. Like, it looks like curdled sand and serum.
Curdled sand and serum. It does.
But it's perfect. Absolutely perfect.
I'm surprised at how quickly these little pigmented spheres kind of pop on
your
skin.
Yeah. You don't have to sit there rubbing and blending for ages. Mm. It's just the most lightweight. Just imagine serum with colour in. But like, also not. It's not like anything I've used before.
It feels like a hydrating serum with make. It's very weird. I like it.
Beautiful, right?
Yes.
Well, listen, shall we take a break very quickly? And then we'll be back from the break.
Oh.
Our breaks work.
Yes.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Okay, I have two new obsessions that I need to share with you. Impress No Glue Press-On Manis and Impress Press-On Falsies Lashes. Trust me, these are getting ready game changers. Both require no glue, so there is no damage to your natural nails and lashes, no mess, and no annoying dry times. Just one step and you're done. Boom. Instant glam. Visit impressbeauty.com/presson and use code PRESSON25 at checkout for 25% off Impress manicure and Press-On falsies.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
And we're back. Hi, everyone. I hope that break was kind to you.
Yeah, was it us or was it not less now?
Or was it Audible?
Or Casper Mattress?
Yeah, I wish, James. Yeah. I wish it was Casper Mattress.
Or was it BetterHelp? I feel like they're everywhere.
They're everywhere, aren't they? Yeah. Well, listen, as it's a season finale, we thought we would go back over some of our most precious, precious guests we've had on our podcast and some of our favy parts. It's a clip show.
Yeah, it's a clip show. But I feel like we've been really lucky with our guests this season. And I hope that we've had some really interesting ones. And we've wanted so many different guests, but we are terrible at organising this podcast.
Yeah.
We literally sit down 5 minutes before we're recording.
And the other day, I only just remembered that we had an email address for this podcast and and like inquiries and stuff like that. I didn't even think about
it. No, so hopefully we'll be having some really exciting guests for you next season as well.
Yeah.
But for now, we want to share some of our favourite clips from some of our amazing guests that we've had on this year.
So let's take it away.
Take it away!
In episode 23, Publicly Parenting, we sat down with the amazing Raw Beauty Christy, who myself and James are huge, huge fans of, and we spoke about the transition from a beauty influencer into still being a beauty influencer, but with a child, and having a child in what we consider the public eye, and how it can have its challenges and the decisions you make as an influencer to your audience.
I wanted to ask, do you feel that some people almost call you out for not posting as much content on YouTube, despite knowing that you are a mother?
I was going to say that there should be
I say this being a YouTuber for 5 years, knowing better, but surely there is a amount of common sense from an audience or from viewers that, of course, you're a new mother now, your priorities have changed and you're not going to be as present online. Or do you find that people are like, well, we knew this was going to happen. Where's she gone?
Yeah.
Where's
she going now?
Do you find that that's
we're her
more...
audience, you know?
And I will preface this by saying, of all the people, of all the moms, I'm the most sensitive to that shit. I am not... I can make it sound like the internet really berates me, but really, is it that many? No. Most people are understanding. Most of the audience is amazing, kind, wonderful, perfect, like angels. Totally like, oh my gosh, you upload so much. But the little small percentage that does say it really hits me hard. So what I will say is, I think that there is an expectation of you work from home. Your husband works with you from home. You don't have an excuse. We all have jobs. We had to go back to work and we didn't have the excuse to like get your shit together and put up YouTube videos. And in a way, they're not wrong. I do work from home. I am so unfathomably lucky to be able to be here with him all day. I'm not great at prioritizing. I'll just be the first to say that I'm not great at like I just get caught up in the day and then I'm like, oh my God, it's 6 p.m. I forgot to film again. So I have to really make a concerted effort to like, okay, you take him, you go for a walk. I'm going to go film my YouTube video. It's a whole thing now. Before it was just like, I could take it leisurely, get ready, do all that stuff. Now it's like, okay, go. And I have to like run and go film a YouTube video super duper fast. And like, and so, yeah, people are understanding, but in a way, I think that, no, they're not as well, because I did post a lot about my pregnancy online, because the way that I view that is it's my pregnancy, it's my body, and I have consent over posting myself. Like I can talk about, oh man, I have restless legs, I have this going on, and I posted my birth story, and so I did all of that stuff. But when I didn't post my son, when I don't share him, when they don't see the finished product and feel like they got some, not all people, obviously, but there's no like finale in a way, because I'm not, he doesn't have consent to be on the internet. I don't want to exploit my child. I know people want to see him. I know, and I know it's frustrating, but it's not. It's nobody's, like, nobody's entitled to my child.
What feels like forever ago now, we were joined by Hannah, otherwise known as Smoky Glow, and we were really going to talk about the rise of kind of like influencer to celebrity, but we kind of talked about all sorts of stuff. I think we really appreciate Hannah's in-depth kind of, well, insight on product launches and why product launches work and why they don't work.
I was gonna ask you, this has nothing to do with anything now. I've completely skipped topic.
Thank you.
But yeah, no, you're welcome, everyone. But I've been messaged a lot, and I'm sure you've got this a lot too. I've been tagging it about Becca shutting down.
Yes.
Now question, do you feel this could be something to do with maybe a budget that went into a certain kind of foundation that maybe didn't go so well?
Wait, tell me, because I don't know what's going on.
The Clear Foundation.
Oh my God!
Yeah. I do think, if I had to guess, that contributed to what's going on now. Yeah. And I also think that we're going to see a lot of other brands who have had maybe some questionable launches that were like a little... I think we're going to see this sort of... I think the first domino has fallen.
Yeah.
And I think we're going to see a lot of other brands that have been around for a long time, that for a long time we've been like, please be creative.
Yes.
Like, please give us more. And we're going to see them starting to fall. And I think that probably would have happened anyway. But I think mismanaging sort of launches like the Clear Foundation for some reason. And I think mismanaging those and COVID is kind of expediting what we were gonna see anyway in like 5 or 10 years, you know?
Do you think people want bigger influencers to fail?
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
That's a really good question.
Because it seems like when something happens, people look for, say for example, Jacqueline Hill releases something or is going to put something out, you'll see comments, let's see what fucks up next, let's see what happens next.
Yeah.
And then it's almost as if people are waiting for, I get this kind of like this hatred for influencers, you know? I get this kind of air.
Yeah.
But it almost seems like the more popular they get, it seems like people want them to fail. There has to be a drama. There
it
has
feels
to
like
be...
now, like, when it's going to happen, not if it's going to happen.
Yes. You know?
Yeah.
I think it's because people... I think it's for a lot of reasons. I think that there is that element of wanting to be people to fail, but I think it's almost like an unconscious thing.
Yeah.
I think people don't even realize that that's what they're trying to do. Yeah. They're just like... You see someone, like, you'll see James Charles, I think, is such a good example, because he started at 17 and he blew up so fast, at, like, astronomical numbers in such a short amount of time. And it was almost like you could see, because it happened in such a short time, the change in his personality and the change in his behavior and the way it was, like, kind of going to his head.
Right.
And as much as we love to see people succeed, when somebody is acting like they know they've succeeded, sometimes you're kind of like, well, that's a little off-putting.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're 18 and you're buying a $10 million home.
Right.
Like, that's a little weird.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I think that people sometimes, because you can see it so quickly, people are like, yeah, like, I'm just not vibing with that anymore. Yeah. So then when something little does happen, they're like, oh.
This is it.
This is the moment to be like, yeah, let's knock him down a few pegs. Let's, you know, take it down a little. And I don't think people mean to be like, well, let's absolutely destroy their mental health and make them want to like literally do horrible things. Yeah. I don't think people want that, but it turns into that, because when you have millions of people saying that you suck, it's very difficult to like mentally go through something like that. So I think it's a lot. I think it's a lot of different reasons, but I think that's a good example. Is kind of like, I think people more just want to take someone down a little and it goes too far, and then we have these, you know,
and I think you have to be excuse me,
wow,
I had dairy today. I think you have to be really careful. I think you have to be as like influencer, I keep air quoting, but that's what it is, influencer.
Yeah,
I don't know why I keep saying that. It's almost like we're given a platform by someone else. We didn't decide that we were going to be influencers. It's like, we tried it, and then we were given it. And when you see people misusing that platform and treating it like, this was all me,
this was given, like,
then it's a little bit like, well, you know what, I gave it to you, fuck you, let's take it down a bit. Like you said, you kind of need to knock them down a few pegs. In episode 19, Collabs from a Coffin, we were joined by Audra, or Audra at Home, as some of you might know her as, and we spoke about something that was kind of a trend, or happened a lot, I wouldn't say it was a trend, in 2021, and that was brands launching collaborations with dead celebrities. And we touched on kind of how this looks to fans, how we think about it from a moral standpoint, and just our opinions, really.
You can't separate the brand from the person, because this thing is like, when you look at Prince, is he more of like a, or any kind of celebrity, are they more of like a brand or like a symbol that can be played around with, rather than like, where's the cutoff line? Because I guess it's like with most celebrities, it, you know, some people feel this huge connection to them and they're in love with them. Like, you love Selena merchandise.
Yes, well, I was I was just gonna say this, because I think there's two. Well, there's not just two different kinds of celebrity. Yeah. Which one are you? if we're comparing, for example, let's compare, right, the three main people that we see, well, not the three main people, but people that we see a lot, you know, put on merchandise. And that is, well, let's say Prince, we'll say Selena, not Selena Gomez.
Everyone knows she's still alive.
Yeah. And Marilyn Monroe, right? Mm. Let's put Prince and Selena together, not just because they were music icons, but because when you watched them, you knew their style, you knew who they were, you knew they were very much like, this is who they are, you knew their, you knew Selena's family, you know, you knew struggles that Prince went through. Mm. Whereas if we look at someone like Marilyn Monroe, who's an actress, is that how she, does anyone else get the feeling, is that how she really was? You know, like, what we saw.
But she wasn't.
Right.
She, like, I believe she had, like, statements where she said, like, she would talk about how men wanted Marilyn Monroe, but then all they got was Norma Jean.
Right.
And so I, like, she's another one where I don't really love the licensing of her image, not just in makeup, but in, like, everything, because that image was... I think troublesome to her based on the books and movies and things like that. It just, that image of her, it also took surgery to get there. Like, this person that she became wasn't who she was. And I think caused her a lot of depression. And so when I look at that, I kind of, I don't feel good. Like when I was younger, obviously I didn't understand it. I was like, oh, Marilyn, diamonds are a girl's best friend. But yeah. Like I got older and realized like, oh, maybe we shouldn't do. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Listen, if you don't walk around your house at least once a week going, diamonds, are you even a person? Like,
oh, I bet start doing
who are
that.
You?
Do you remember there was a period of time, and I think it was like the early 2000s, where absolutely everywhere, right, there was black and white pictures of Marilyn Monroe.
She was on yeah, lighters, canvases,
bags, mm-hmm. and they were always black and white, but mm-hmm. there was like diamante details. Absolutely yes. everywhere. It was everywhere you
everywhere.
Went. It was insane.
Every like it was Marilyn Monroe bags, Audrey yeah. Hepburn bags. It was yeah. such a weird thing that just randomly yeah. because I feel like was that when like TCM like became like a channel or something?
Oh, maybe because didn't they release a big like box set of like DVDs or like a library of DVDs or something? I can't. I remember
like a weird
wanting
time.
It. Yeah, yeah,
and like I don't know. I feel like there's. I feel like if a celebrity like Selena, for instance, I don't get upset about her posthumous makeup because she was very into makeup.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
So like that was a thing for her. Mm-hmm. So I get that. Right. That yeah. makes sense. It doesn't feel ooky. Mm-hmm. But I feel like when there are people where you can kind of see that wasn't their thing.
Right,
like
right.
I know Prince liked
that's,
to wear makeup, right. but I don't think he would have liked this bunk ass no. whack palette that they released.
In episode 9, we were joined by Jill Dunn and Carlene Higgins of Breaking Beauty podcast. As well as being like an iconic moment for our podcast, we talked about iconic moments in beauty, people, and those products that really, really changed the face of beauty.
I love this topic. I mean, this is why we, on our show, we talk about the breakthrough moments in people because that's pretty much why I fell in love with beauty is because I feel like it really is just one lens into the world and into society. And it really does mirror like what we're thinking and what we're feeling. And I think the prime example of that is MAC Cosmetics. And I know Robert, as like a former MAC makeup artist, like you're going to know everything that I'm talking about, but I really drank the Kool-Aid on that one because yeah. we interviewed Frank Toscan ourselves. No, so this was yeah. a few years ago now. It was one of our earlier mm-hmm. episodes. And of course he's no longer with Mac. So it's not that easy to get an interview with Frank. And he's based here in Toronto. So we went to his condo in Yorkville and like sat in his living room. And I just felt like that brand is just pure nostalgia to me. And I know probably yeah. for you guys as well. And so many listeners growing up like in the 90s, it was not the cornucopia of Sephora brands that you mm-hmm. see today, you know? And I just felt like MAC was so breakthrough having those like powerful colors that, you know, was yes. for makeup artists first.
Yeah.
And so that was the first introduction for me of just like the magic of makeup. And then of course it was everything that it stood for, you know, the tagline, all ages, all races, all genders. Like I really feel that paved the way to all of the inclusive brands that we see today, this wave. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But MAC had to do like the hard work. Yeah. When it came to that.
My iconic moment, for better or for worse, is sort of the era-defining work influence of Kim Kardashian. And I think really the person who's in charge of it all is Kris Jenner.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you think about them, Keeping Up with the Kardashians, it launched in 2007. And so now they're in their 20th and final season, which is 2001. So we've really seen absolutely every incarnation of this family and what they've been through. And we've seen them grow up and their kids and all of that. You know, Kris Jenner, as I mentioned before, actually that was on our show, but she really is, she was on the Wall Street Journal magazine cover this week. And the tagline was from momager to mogul. And yeah. she said that I do have a skincare line that I love that's ready to go when the time is right from in a year from now or maybe 2 years from now. And I really think it's important for older women to realize that, you know, that older women can have products too. So I'll be interested to see where that comes from. But in terms of their influence, I really think there's two parts to it. Number one is, of course, the aesthetic. And then number two, like sort of the business model that they have rolled out to, you know, that's basically being copied by every single celebrity who wants to cash in the beauty world. And on a personal note, I met Kim Kardashian in 2010. She came to Toronto to launch her fragrance at the Shopping Channel at the time. And I'll never forget, it was in the Hazelton Hotel, Carlene. It was on the side room where basically there was like people there from the Shopping Channel, executives and things like that. And every major magazine sent their like number two or three.
Yeah, I skipped that event. I remember that event and I was like, meh.
Yeah.
Busy.
So it was a licensing deal she had for a fragrance at the time, and just no one cared. I cared because I liked the show. I liked keeping up with the Kardashians. So I went and she was so chill and she was wearing this like bodycon white dress. Like this is before she met Kanye. Yeah. And it just to think of how far she has come from there. That was in 2010 to now.
Was this pre-sex tape incredible. Or post-sex tape? Because this was back in the beginning.
Where does that fit in with the Kardashian series timeline? Was that before
the sex tape?
Yeah. Was it before the TV series? Mm. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, no, you said the series started in 2007. So wasn't it, this would have been 3 years later, 3 years into the show?
No, but I think they're asking about the sex tape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The sex tape was before I'm pretty sure. I don't know. Okay. But yeah, so she just basically was kind of on the fringes of the beauty world. I remember she also had a contract with like, what was the lip pomper at the time? Lip Fusion Beauty?
Oh, yeah, that was a thing. Lip Fusion, I think.
She had like a contract with them to sort of like promo it. So basically she was on the fringes of beauty, but it wasn't until, you know, I think she got teamed up with Kanye and with Makeup by Mario that she really started to come forward with this aesthetic. So it really defined the last decade, of course. So it's like, and it's been replicated on YouTube and on faces all around the world.
Yeah.
You know, you know, it's like the arched brow, the baked powder contour, color corrected concealer, the neutral lip pencil that's slightly overdrawn, the brown gloss or the new gloss. And I just feel like that aesthetic is undeniably attached to her.
It defined the last decade.
In episode 16, we were extremely lucky to be joined by David Yee, who is the founder of Good Light World and Good Light, the skincare brand, who make incredible, incredible skincare. And we're speaking about his book launch, Pretty Boys. And this book is about men and masculine identifying people throughout history who have used makeup, even from the beginning of time, almost. And we spoke about brands and gender throughout brands and gender equality. And he was the most incredible person to speak about this. And he had some great advice for brands out there who want to be a little bit more inclusive. Or do you think there's a reason why brands are maybe too scared to almost rebrand themselves? And like brands that are considered more classic brands, like let's say for example Estee Lauder or something like that, or YSL, where they're in department stores and it's usually you know, all mature women.
All smells like rose.
do you think brands are scared to try and start including everyone?
I think brands are terrified of these cultural shifts that are happening in seismic ways that aren't just happening, you know, in decades. It's happening overnight, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that brands are really rethinking their entire marketing plan or what they believe in and what they stand for. Yeah. I think, unfortunately, these brands really don't stand for a bigger mission except for capitalism and being out there and gaining as much as they can. Mm-hmm. But smaller brands are starting out with with missions, right? We have brands like Self-Made, which is all about mental health, or Good Light, which is all about gender inclusivity. And there's brands like Rare Beauty by Selena Gomez that are also about mental health. Yeah. And I think that you have to stand for something now, where you fall for everything. And unfortunately, these big conglomerates have never stood for anything. They've never stood for a social cause, and in their DNA, it's not in there. Mm-hmm. And so I think that they are pivoting and trying to pivot fast, see what is authentic to them, what is real to them. But it's very difficult. It's a very difficult transition, because they do have a built-in audience and customer base that they don't want to alienate. But at the same time, they're thinking, we need to progress into the future. Beauty is the way through. Mm-hmm. And I think that beauty is the most progressive industries out there. And so how do they kind of pivot that's in an authentic way? Now, that's a real challenge that I feel like every brand is thinking and trying to tiptoe around, but it's something that they need to do quickly, or else they're going to be irrelevant in the next few years or next few months.
We did recently, I thought of that question because we did a panel not that long ago.
It was like a private panel.
Yeah. Over the face. No, what was it?
Zoom.
That's it. Zoom. I keep always forget what it's called. Over the Zoom. And it was with bigger brands, and we couldn't see them, but we knew they were there. They were asking us a lot of questions, and that one in particular as well, the one I'm going to ask you is, a lot of them were asking, how can a brand like Clinique, Estee Lauder, what can they do you think, to start including everyone and not seeing like there being
Is it as simple as changing packaging? Is it as simple as changing the names to make them, you know, more less fluffy or less hard hitting? And that's the kind of questions we were getting, was like, oh, should we change our packaging from pink to clear? And it's like, it's not,
again, it's that thing of like, we gave an example of like deodorant. It's like we were saying cucumber is always women's deodorant. It's cucumber and something. And men's is always gym. I don't know.
Green.
leather and tobacco, you know? And it's all these things that are considered so... It's like they were getting it wrong. They were like, what do we do? Do we change the packaging?
It's like, no, just allow us to pick.
That's it. And we were saying, and like you were saying, brands are starting now with a mission. And people see brands like they are people. It's not like, you know, it's like a Good Light is my friend because this is how they see the world. You know, Rare Beauty is my friend because this is how they see the world. Whereas you don't go, I don't know, Clinique's my friend because they all wear lab coats. Like, it's not like, that's not something you think of, you know?
Yeah.
And people now are picking brands based on, like, they're picking friends. If we were to say, for example, I know I keep using Estee Lauder and Clinique
because they're the best example.
If we were to change our friend Estee Lauder, do you think there's a way that they can pivot and be like, in a genuine way that seems genuine, where they can be like, okay, our brand isn't just for what we consider feminine people or females?
You know, I have mixed feelings about this because everyone deserves to be redeemed or try to do the right thing. But if you're even asking that question, how can we be more inclusive, or how can we be more of this generation? You're already behind, because that means that the decision makers inside who are creating these brands or have the agency aren't from the communities that you're trying to market to. Right?
Oh,
and so if you're trying to be more inclusive, do you have enough Asian people in management, enough Black folks who are, you know, heading these departments? Do you have enough people who are, you know, not just on the gender binary, or non-binary folks or trans folks who are also a part of your departments? Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of have to question these brands and say, okay, you don't know the answers, and you should know the answers, because that should be who is making the decisions.
Right,
are you trying to capitalize on diversity and inclusion, or are you actually being diverse and inclusive?
In one of my favorite podcast episodes, Trolls and Tribulations, we spoke to Mal from the Millennial Therapist podcast. And again, amongst many other things, we mainly spoke about trolls, their deep obsessions with their favorite influencers and celebrities, and why they take attacks on their favorite influencers and celebrities so personally, and why they even end up resorting to things like death threats and death to your family and burning down your house and all that kind of stuff. It got very interesting.
We've talked a few times with people in this podcast about, is there a difference between viewers, subscribers, fans, obsessions, or interests in your typical celebrity, Hollywood celebrity versus a YouTuber, you know, what builds up that stan culture and that interest? Like, do you feel there is a difference?
I think, and I think the last episode you had with Smokey Glow, she kind of hit it on the nail. But she spoke to how it's more of a personal level with YouTubers and influencers because you all are so accessible, right? Like, and you're not, you don't have this facade of like, oh, I'm just acting or I'm just singing. Like, you're like, I'm Robert, I'm James. And you're, and we know that you're recording in kind of a private area. So I think it takes away that third wall, fourth wall, whatever wall is there. It makes it more personable where I think that obsession intensifies with this new group.
Yeah, because it's an accessibility that we've never had before. Like when we were teenagers, the amount of, you know,
I have no idea.
Listen, so I had magazines, right?
That's how you got it. And that's as close as you got. Whereas now we can be in bed on our phones. We can be on the toilet if we want to be watching an influencer, you know? You can be in the shower, hopefully not holding your phone in the shower. That'd be weird. But things like that. And it's everywhere you go. So like you said, it's that accessibility to them. So what borderlines on obsession being like a stan, or would you consider those the same thing?
I think there is a line when it negatively impacts your life. When somebody, like, I think James or maybe Robert, you did the Fenty line, right? I think James, you both did it because she does the makeup and the skincare, right? So, like, when you were honest and you're like, oh, like, this isn't all that, it's whatever, they're like, how dare you, fucker? Like,
yeah.
And it's like, I'm sorry, did I call your mom ugly? Like, like, you don't know them.
That is such a good point. What drives, this has always bugged me and I never understand it. Okay, say I'm a hugest fan of Lady Gaga. We'll use her because I'm not. Like, I think she's a great actress and singer, but I don't like her music. But what drives someone? Say I love her. She doesn't know me. She doesn't know I exist, but I'm obsessed. And then I see somebody say something negative, not really negative, just constructive criticism online. What then drives that rage in me to be like, you know what? Like you said, you know, that kind of aggression where it's like, you just insulted my family. Yeah, literally to a point where they're like, kill yourself and you burn your house down. What drives that? Why? What, where does that obsession come from? This person doesn't know them. At all. They don't know they exist.
So I believe that there's a lot of different levels, right? I think, you know, and this is really generalizing because we don't know the specific person, but I think we have to take account of, like, the age. Because I can't imagine seeing, like, a 40, 50-year-old person be like, how dare you? I love Gaga. Like, fuck your, I hate your cat. Like, your cat's stupid.
That would make me cry. That would make me cry.
Right? I'm like, you don't even know my cat, man.
You don't know my cat,
But I think it's that over-identification with whomever they love, right? Because you see qualities in these type of celebrities, and I think influencers intensifies because you all are so, like, accessible and relatable that you're like, I want to be this person. I like what this person's about, hence I am like them. So I think people are taking a personal attack because they feel like you are attacking their values, right? So it's not just the music, but I think, like, with Rihanna, she's doing a great thing with her cosmetic line, right? Making it very inclusive. She is a black, you know, black woman doing wonderful things. So to say something not positive about her may feel like an attack on her whole being and what she's doing for the world, when it's not. It's like, well, her fucking nighttime has sunscreen in it. Why? Like,
yeah, why? Yeah, yeah. Yes.
Why do you need an SPF to go night-night?
Yeah. In In episode 13, Positive Influence, we sat down with Soph. Soph Does Life, or you may have known her way back in the day, Soph Does Nails. And we spoke about being an influencer and going from, you know, school and the choices you make as an influencer that affect your everyday life. Speaking of that then, you obviously started, you said when you were 18, and we were talking about how it was a completely different place like back then. Obviously now, people around that age kind of, they have TikTok, they have, you know, all this other stuff. Do you think at the age of 18, how old are you now, sorry?
24.
So do you think at the age of 18, you would have been able to handle your daily work life now or your weekly schedule now? Like, do you think that would have been something that you could have grasped and worked well with?
Oh, God. What, as if I was to do exactly what I'm doing now, but just when I was 18?
At the age of 18. And so you blew up. So you had, like, the same amount of followers you do now.
No. Well, this is part of the reason why I actually ended up dropping out of university. Because I went to uni for a year. And that was when my channel started sort of taking off. And it got to the point where I was staying up till, like, 4 a.m. most days. And I had multiple sort of times throughout that year where I just had a bit of a breakdown. Like, I can't do both, because how am I supposed to keep up with making, at the time I was doing, like, strictly doing 3 videos every single week, sometimes more, sometimes I would do 4 or 5. I don't know why to myself. Honestly, yeah. And then in any of my spare time, I was trying to get my uni work done. And then if there were any big projects that were coming up, I was up until 4 a.m. trying to finish my uni work. And then I would go in the next day and hand it in. And then I would go home and film a YouTube video. And it was just like a constant cycle of just doing something. And like you said, my friends would be like, oh, do you want to do something? I'd be like, I can't. I've either got to finish uni work or I've got to film this YouTube video. And I just couldn't do both. And so, no, I think if I was 18 and I was at school still and trying to do my A-levels and it all blew up like this, I don't think I would have been able to keep it up. I would have had to quit YouTube. Or at least, you know, just post once a week or once every 2 weeks or something.
But then because, would you have got to the position that you are now with YouTube?
That's wouldn't have done. This is the thing. So I think if I had stayed at uni, which obviously all my uni tutors were like, oh, you don't want to quit. Because first of all, it looks bad on them. Because many people dropped out and they didn't even do YouTube. It was just not the best course that I was on. But yeah, they all encouraged me to stay on. And they were saying, oh, but if you get your degree as a graphic designer in a few years' time, you know, you could be on a decent wage and all of this. And it's like, yeah, but I could also do that now if I leave uni and just take that risk and see where it goes. And obviously that's what I did decide to do. And I was lucky that it did pay off and it worked out. I wouldn't encourage everyone to start a YouTube channel and be like, okay, I'm going to drop out.
This is what I think a lot of people don't realize is, yes, being a YouTuber can eventually pay well and give you a really good career, but I don't think I know anyone who is not living with their parents or wasn't living with their parents or had somewhere where they didn't have to pay rent and you know pay bills and stuff, who didn't work a full-time job alongside building up their career as a YouTuber. And I think people don't see that gradual success. They all think it's overnight kind of success.
And here's the thing, I think I've mentioned this before in a podcast. I very much think the success of how far I've gone on my YouTube channel so far was down to luck and recording the right video at the same time. And I know a lot of people are like, the algorithm, do this, change your lighting. Oh my God, I thought I need to
Should I move that for you?
No, I'm not telling you.
It's just foam.
No,
just
I can mix it. Whereas I'm like, well, if I didn't make that video at that right time and post it on that day about this subject, I wouldn't do anything. Do you think a lot of it is down to luck, and how much of it is down to hard work in terms of being successful
in a realistic world?
I do definitely think it is a huge combination of both, because I did work extremely hard at the start of my YouTube channel to, you know, push out as many videos as I could. But if I hadn't made, you know, a couple of trending videos that blew up at the time. I saw people doing, what was my video that blew up? I think it was testing Poundland makeup or testing Primark makeup or something. And a couple of other people had done those videos and they'd done really well. So I thought, okay, I'm going to hop on that trend and I'm going to do that. And then those videos did really well and loads of people found my channel from that. And so if I hadn't made those videos, if people hadn't found them from that specific trend, I don't think I would have grown as much. And I do think there definitely is a big part of it that's down to luck. But yeah. also, if I wasn't as hardworking and wasn't pushing out all of those videos, people would have maybe clicked on my channel and thought, oh, well, she barely uploads. I'm not going to subscribe.
Very true.
So I think it's a combination of both.
Yeah.
But a lot of the time I do say, oh, I just got lucky. And my family kind of like, Soph, give yourself some credit. You did credit. Actually work hard, which I do know, but I think is quite lucky.
I thought with me, I was really lucky. But then I also felt like you said, I was making content before. And it was always like, I'm making this content. So when I get to that point where a video does really well, I also have all this content, you know? But I do think, what if I never made that video?
Yeah.
I had to force you, let's be honest.
Do you remember? go on.
No, you carry on.
Do you remember the first time I recorded a YouTube video? And it was in London. And our rooms were next to each other, and all you could hear was me shouting at a camera.
Robert used to shout at the camera.
Trying to record an introduction, but I felt, you know, when you feel really uncomfortable in a room by yourself talking. So it's like, hi!
But then, literally, last year? I had to force him to do this properly.
Year before last
Seriously.
Year.
Mm-hmm. I was like, look.
It was last year.
I was really honest. I was like, this is what I'm making. This is, like, how it works and how... you're already doing it, but here's how you could go a step further
and do this.
I was like, no, I don't get it. I had to force him to do it. But that's the thing, when you say it's not just luck, he was on the right track to being able to do this as a full-time job because of the content you were making and because of the views you were getting.
But you
and
just,
then you got those videos. Yeah,
you just told me you were in social media marketing. So I didn't understand.
I wouldn't tell him where I lived. But that's the thing. So you had all that content behind you and that quality content that was getting good views. But then it was like, this is trending, do this, do that. And then luckily, none of my suggestions were the ones that trended. But, you know, you caught onto those trends. So it was a bit of luck, but time, but also understanding the algorithm.
Wow, what a guess.
What a clip show guess.
Well, we'll be back very soon. We don't quite know when yet, but we are coming back. That's not like, oh, maybe we'll be back.
Yeah,
we're
not disbanding.
we're not arguing behind the scenes. And like I said, keep an eye on our social media. It's at the Double Cleanse Podcast on Instagram to keep you updated on everything. Thank you so much for being there for us through season 2.
Yeah, the longest season of any season ever.
I think we have like 60 episodes. I think so.
It's the longest season ever of anything.
So we're just going to take a little break and we'll be back and we'll be seeing you very, very soon.
Thanks so much.
Bye.
Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.